Thank you very much, everybody.
God bless you, Mr. President. God bless America.
Thank you very much. You just take care of yourselves. The hostages will come back. They're coming, all coming back on Monday.
All?
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
That was a scene where President Trump called some of the families of some of the hostages from that are being held in Gaza by the Hamas side, that the deal has been struck and agreed to by both Hamas and Israel, that they'll be coming home on Monday. So all of the remaining hostages, both alive and deceased, will be coming back. The war, a ceasefire will allegedly go into effect tonight in Israel time, not long from right now. Apparently, there's going to be a cabinet meeting where the Israeli cabinet will sign and declare that, yes, we have agreed to the terms that President Trump has outlined, or at least what was agreed to in Sharm el-Sheikh in Egypt over the last 3 days between the negotiators between Hamas and Israel. Apparently, they have now come to an agreement. And the ceasefire will go into effect as early as tonight. We'll see how a lot of that goes. Just real quick, I want to give you some of the comments on actually how this happened. Trump, in a phone call to some of the Fox News hosts last night, said that it was really because of a lot of people around the world came together.
We had some tremendous help, as you know, with everybody from Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner and Marco, and we had everybody, JD, the whole group was just amazing. And the military was, as you know, very instrumental in getting this done. We have a great military with great leadership. The whole world came together, to be honest. So many countries that you wouldn't have even thought of it, they came together. The world has come together around this deal. And that's something I would say that without that wouldn't happen.
I think he's probably right on that. There certainly is a lot of people in the world came together. One might reasonably ask why it took this long for the world to come together with the catastrophic condition of the Palestinian people for so long. I guess one can say better late than never. Though a lot of the reasons why were pretty negative toward the Israeli side, it came at pretty high cost to the Israeli side. Most recently at the UN General Assembly, where many states were very, very critical of Israel, more so than I think that they have been maybe since the 1973 war or so. So I think it was a pretty big watershed moment. 156 states have officially signed on that they recognize a Palestinian state in direct contradiction to what Israel wants. So I think that pressure, along with what the White House was bringing to bear and a lot of the public opinion in the United States, even among the Republicans, was turning more and more against Israel. They are seeing a degradation in their support. And I think that it was probably a pretty calculated move on the Israeli side that they said that, well, we can't continue to say no to this because it could get a lot worse. Now, in President Trump's telling, all that is now gone, and all that is going to be over with the signing of this. Or, as he put it when he talked to Bibi Netanyahu.
I spoke to Bibi Netanyahu just a little while ago. He called. He said, I can't believe it. He said, everybody's liking me now. Meaning him. He said, I said, they're more importantly, they're loving Israel again. And they really are. I said, Israel cannot fight the world, Bibi. They can't fight the world. And he understands that very well.
Well, Trump is right on the last part. He can't fight the world. He can't stay against it. If that was the message that President Trump was pushing behind the scenes, it seems to have finally sunk in, even if it's just out of self-preservation. I'm not sure that the first part of that is right, though. We'll wait and see how that plays out here in the coming just hours and days, even. That everybody's loving Israel. I'm pretty sure you're not going to go back to loving, because all those images that Gary's been showing you on B-roll as we've been going through this war for the last couple of years, it's all still there. There is still tens of thousands of bodies almost certainly underneath a lot of this rubble which were never recovered. That's going to be a very painful situation to try and uncover a lot of that stuff. There are still a bunch of things to be decided right now, but the most important thing is to get to the ceasefire and then get to the implementation. Now, let me real quick kind of give you an idea about what's actually been agreed to so far. There is a two-phased plan, and I'm going to go through here what's phase one, but just kind of so you understand, Phase two has not even been negotiated yet. So there is room for cautious optimism, but not any overt celebration. Now, I can totally get the people inside of especially Palestine and Israel as well. I can understand them celebrating right now. I think it's appropriate. They should. And in fact, that can help because it needs to put pressure on both the Israeli government and the Hamas leaders. Both sides need to be pressured to keep this thing going. Now, you may remember that this is the second time this year that there will have been a ceasefire, assuming that this goes into effect here hours from now, because they had one and a plan to get all the hostages back in January of this year. But Israel then was not under as much pressure. And then after they got some of the hostages back, then they sabotaged that and they went back into fighting. Let's hope we don't have a repeat of that. I think a lot of the conditions that are in place now weren't then. And so I think that there's a better shot that it goes through this time, but I just can't guarantee anything. So let's don't celebrate too hard from outside, but still keep pressure on the two leadership groups to make sure we bring this thing all the way home. Let's take a look at this first of all. The first thing is this, that the ceasefire is going to go into effect tonight as soon as Israel's cabinet signs off. There was a interview with Fox News with the Israeli Foreign Minister Saar, who addressed that issue.
Is this the end of the war?
Well, it's the implementation of the first phase. We don't have any intention to renew the war. But parts of the commitments is, for example, the disarmament of Hamas, that they will lay down their arms and so on.
And that will so, be but phase
we two. We will first have a ceasefire immediately after the decision will be approved by the government. There will be a ceasefire.
So that was just hours ago. Actually, that was this morning in Washington, D.C. time. So you see, he wouldn't, when pressed on, is the war over, because that's the hope, he would not commit to that because he said, well, there's still some things that have to be determined and some of those things in phase two, which I'll get to in just a minute. But you see that the Fox News host there tried to press him. Is it over? And are you talking about the stuff from phase two and part of that? Now, all he wanted to do is go back to, well, there's going to be a ceasefire after the cabinet meets tonight. And let's get focused on that. So the ceasefire is part of phase one. That is the most important thing. It does come first. Now, the Hamas side says that some of their leaders, just right before we came on air here, released a statement saying that even that is contingent upon what comes out of the Israeli cabinet. If they just say there's a ceasefire, they're claiming that's not good enough. They want to actually have a declaration that the war will be over. Not that it has to end then, but there's a declaration that the war will come to an end with the accomplishment of the objectives. So we'll see if that's a sticking point or not. So that's why I keep using the term as long as the things go into effect tonight, because even that's not guaranteed, especially if the Hamas side doesn't get the declaration that they're looking for. I'm not convinced that is what the Israeli side is going to come out with. We'll certainly bring that to you if it happens to come out during this broadcast here. Otherwise, we'll bring it to you in our show with Professor John Mearsheimer later this afternoon. But that's going to be, that's one there. It's playing hardball with Russia. And then we're also going to talk about more on this, and we'll certainly have more on this. There's actually a cabinet meeting in the United States right now with President Trump, and there's no doubt that when the questions come up that this will certainly come up. So hopefully we'll have some even newer information later this afternoon. But that's one of the first sticking points there. Assuming that goes through, though, and there actually is the ceasefire, here are some of the other terms here. So first of all, of course, from the Israeli side, all hostages living and deceased will be returned on Monday, as you heard President Trump say in that phone call there to the hostages. And that has people in Israel very, very excited. As you may know, there has been almost throughout this war significant protest inside of Israel against Benjamin Netanyahu. The vast majority of those have not been against the war per se, though that part has been growing here in the last month or so. But the majority of these have always been against the Netanyahu government for failing to get the hostages back. Now, a lot of that happened, and the anger from the Israeli side came after the Israeli side broke the ceasefire in January, because there was a plan to get them all back, and it was a multi-phase process then as well. and Israel sabotaged it after phase one when they got some of the hostages back. So if they do get them all back, that will be a huge relief for those families, and they'll be very happy. And so that's great. On the is the Palestinian side, they also get some hostages back. They get 250 Palestinians that are serving life sentences for various crimes. Obviously, the Israeli side thinks that they were terrible. The Palestinian side thinks they were trumped up. Whatever, doesn't matter what either side thinks. They're going to get 250 back. They're also going to get 1,700 what they call the Israelis call detainees, what the Palestinians call hostages back, that people have been taken since the war started in 2023 without charges. They were just taken and detained. They were just kept in prisons with no due process or anything else. So the Palestinian side calls them their hostages that they want to get back. So most of these are women and children, ironically. So they're going to be returned as well. So there's going to be a lot of celebration in both the Palestinians inside the Gaza Strip as well as the Israelis inside of Israel on that. All that could happen as early as Monday. Let's see. Then we also have IDF will have a withdrawal, a partial withdrawal. Gary, we have that map up with the yellow line. If we could pull that up, if we happen to have it. The first withdrawal, this is part of also one of the sticking points, that there's going to have to be a part of the Trump's plan is a withdrawal all the way out of the Gaza Strip. Well, the Israeli side said this morning that they're only willing to initially withdraw to an area where they would still control 53% of the Gaza Strip. And that yellow line there is what President Trump himself posted on his Truth Social as being that initial withdrawal line. So you see, it still doesn't give a whole lot of area to the Palestinian people. And you're still talking about 2 million people are going to remain squished in that very narrow, even more narrow band within the Gaza Strip, the strip within a strip. This you may hear this yellow line. That's one of the things that's going to be talked about.
Hey, Danny, what's the black line on that map?
That is the Gaza Strip outline. That is the Gaza Strip. The black line is the existing Gaza Strip before. And now then it's going to be reduced somewhat less, because right now Israeli forces are even inside the yellow line there. So that's one of the big issues there. One of the other bigger ones, if getting their hostages back and stopping the bombing is one of the bigger things for the Palestinian side, the very next big thing is allowing aid in. Now, as we did a show not long ago where we showed you that Israel had gone from what used to be 400 feeding points throughout the Gaza Strip and had narrowed them down to four, three of which were in the far southern end, which made it a nightmare. And then, of course, they had these gauntlets where they were firing at people, and over 1,000 people were killed just trying to get to the food aid. Now then they're saying, all right, we're going to go back to something big. So apparently on the first day, they will allow in 400 food aid trucks, and that will be ramped up until there is backup. And I think the term they used was soon, without committing to any number. It will be up to the required 600 aid trucks per day. And that can finally alleviate the starvation issue and the problem with malnutrition throughout, because there has been just a trickle, sometimes 30 and 40 trucks, sometimes 80 or so, way, way, way below even the bare minimum necessary. And the difficulties with distribution has been well chronicled. So apparently that's the next thing, is that they will finally start ending the food siege on the Palestinian people, and that'll get ramped up to something better very soon. Next thing I want to talk about here is the governance. So according to the terms that's being discussed coming out of Sharm el-Sheikh, Egypt, is that there will be a committee of independent Palestinians will be ruled, but they must pass Israeli acceptance first for the membership. And Israel has to agree to it. And there have been 40 names put forth by the Palestinian side and said, these are some of the people that we want to live. So it has to be vetted. So it's not like there's going to be self-governance right now. It's only going to be what the Israeli side will permit. Apparently, they're going to make sure there's no connections to Hamas or the Palestinian Authority, both of whom they have said are rejected at this point. You have Israel. One of the people that the Palestinians want the most and has been in Israeli prison for a long time, which from some of the people I've talked to that with knowledge in the region, in the Palestinian side especially, is a man named Marwan Bougouti. And apparently he is somebody that a large number of the Palestinians can get behind. He had issues with Hamas, with the Palestinian Authority, so he's kind of independent from both of those. And a lot of people want him in there. He's very popular, and they want him out. Unfortunately, he is not in the initial list of either the 250 or the 1,700 that are going to be released, and that could potentially also be a sticking point. You can just imagine what Israel may not want. One would suggest that maybe they don't want someone who's popular. Maybe they want someone who's adequate. That, you know, if it's somebody that they approve that the Palestinians don't really want, then you're going to get tepid response from the Palestinian side. And I don't know, maybe that's what Israel wants. They don't want somebody that would be popular among there. You could certainly see where they might be against that as well. Palestinians want somebody like that. And I think that it's a bad move for Israel not to want somebody like that, because if you can get somebody that the people can get behind, then they may actually listen to them. You put somebody in there who's not, and you have a higher chance, in my view, for either a renunciation of these terms or a shedding of them, going back to fighting. But you can argue whether or not that is something Israel wants or not. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt for now, but we'll keep a very close eye on that. Trump apparently is going to head to Jerusalem on Sunday, and he will speak to the Knesset. So I think that'll be kind of he'll do a bit of a victory lap there, and we'll see how that's going to work out. I'm sure that's going to be held into, all going to be all over the news. I think that that's actually a good thing. Frankly, I'm okay with him taking a victory lap on this, because that will put more pressure on the Israeli government to stick to the terms. Because if Trump goes in there, makes his big victory speech, and then all of a sudden, some period of time after that, Israel again reneges on the terms and goes back and starts the war back over again, it's going to be egg on President Trump's face. He's going to look like it was a fake deal or something. I don't think he's going to want that. So we'll see what happens from that as well. Foreign Minister Saar also talked about that they immediately want to expand peace into the region. I don't think we have any sound bites on this one, but he had said also that he wants to potentially expand the Abraham Accords. Now, this is also a potentially good thing, because Israel wants to take advantage of the peace momentum to increase the number of states that are peaceful with them as well. And anything that can lower the temperature throughout the region, I'm for that. Now, there's a lot of difficulties and a lot of trouble with that, and the devil's in the details, as we always say, but anything moving towards peace, even an ugly peace, is better than continuing on with an uglier, bloodier war. So there's no perfect peace. Let's just be clear on this. Nothing is going to be perfect about this one. There's not going to be anything perfect with an expanded Abraham Accords or any of that kind of stuff, but anything moving in the direction of peace is better. An ugly peace is better than a bloody war. Continuing on, there are some challenges, however. So even with this phase one, like I said, the problem with phase two, even, it hasn't even been negotiated yet. So that leaves wide open the possibility that you get the terms of this phase one done, and then you never get to phase two, and then that could potentially stumble right back into a renewed war. So there is a lot of detail still left to be discovered here. Hamas, for example, says that there has to be a public declaration that the war is over today before they go into phase one. We'll see if that happens. Hamas also wants security guarantees from the United States. Now, if that sounds a little odd to you, that Hamas is asking the U.S. for security guarantees, that's because they're very keenly aware of what happened earlier this year with the January ceasefire. That there was no security guarantees for them. So when Israel reneged on the deal and went back, they unilaterally started the war back again, and there was no one to stop anybody. So they continued on. So now Hamas is saying, we want security guarantees as part of phase two to get to the actual end of war and the disarmament of Hamas, expulsion of Hamas, because part of the Trump plan that there was a call for amnesty for the Hamas fighters themselves, those who were still left, and the Hamas leaders. And Israel had at least tentatively said prior to this that they're okay with that, that they would guarantee their safe exit from the Gaza Strip. We'll have to see what happens with that as well, because there's going to certainly be many on the Israeli side that says, no, we don't want to give Hamas a free ride out. Because the idea that Hamas is just going to exit the Gaza Strip and just say, you know, shrug their shoulders and say, well, we gave it our best. We did. Now let's just go, you know, be a peaceful farmer somewhere and some other Arab land or wherever they're going to be allowed to get off to. I doubt very seriously that's going to happen, because you can't go from this 2 years of war where so many of your people have been killed, so many of your leaders were killed, and then just say, all right, we're not going to start planning on a return later on, because otherwise you almost start a countdown clock to another one here. So there's genuine issues associated with that. We'll see how that works out as well. Phase two, some of the things that have to be negotiated are a full IDF withdrawal. And that seems to be one of the bigger sticking points on the Israeli side, because they don't want to. You may recall that in the conference after President Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu had, after I think it was last week when they met in Washington, that, you know, this Trump plan calls for a full withdrawal of the Israeli Defense Forces. The Israelis and Benjamin Netanyahu, in his comments after, and when he says he agrees with the Trump plan, he did not say anything about agreeing to a full withdrawal. To the contrary, he said that the Israeli security forces will provide security in the Strip indefinitely. So that's a pretty big contradiction to what the Trump plan was. And Foreign Minister Saar was at links in the Fox News interview this morning. They kept on saying over and over that he, you know, wanted to support the Trump plan. It's in the Trump plan, et cetera. But that's in the Trump plan, and that doesn't seem to be in the Israeli plan. That's part of phase two. So that's going to be a real difficult one. If the Trump plan calls for an independent force, whether that's Arab or other international forces, somebody that's acceptable to both sides, not the Israeli Defense Forces. Now, I would argue that the Israeli Defense Forces want that deal, because it is very, very costly for them in multiple terms to continue this indefinitely staying in the Strip, because they have to keep the reserves on, and the reserves are already way stretched beyond the limit of what they were ever designed for. And there was already lots of problems with the reserves not showing up when ordered to active duty because of the disruption to their lives, because of PTSD kinds of things, all kinds of issues that were associated with it. There's been a pretty noticeable increase in the number of suicides among the Israeli Defense Forces and veterans. So all of those things have to be taken into effect. So the idea to keep the IDF in there indefinitely for a long period of time is, I don't think, is in Israel's interest to do so. So that pressure may actually lead to something there. We'll have to wait and see how that's going to work out. The other one is, as I mentioned, is Hamas's disarmament and their exit. And this is one of the other things that Foreign Minister Saar mentioned this morning.
Who then governs the Gazan people, sir?
According to Trump's plan, there is a committee of local Palestinians that will do so. And there will be, of course, like a peace council headed by President Trump. All the answers are fully in Trump's plan. Just need to read it. The PA might be relevant only if we'll pass the reforms that were mentioned there in the plan. Let's see if that will happen.
And when he mentions the part about the Palestinian Authority, the PA, that maybe they would be allowed to be the governing authority at some point, he said only after radical or de-radicalization, I think is the term that they have used in there. And if you're wondering what that is, it says that they have to, you know, teach their school children apparently positive things about Israel. They have to not talk about anything negative. And that is just an ask that I don't think anyone in the Palestinian side ever could agree to, because, I mean, just look at the wreckage, physical and otherwise, of the last, 2 years of this conflict. And as you've seen from our show that we did on the anniversary of 10/7, history didn't start on October 7, 2023, but you really have to go all the way back to 1946 and 47 and all the way through there. You can't not teach what happened to the Palestinian people all during that time, and especially over the last 2 years of this massive bombardment, the physical destruction way beyond any kind of even any declaration of military necessity. It was just the wanton destruction of the Gaza Strip with the attempt to actually create such unlivable conditions that the others in the world would take the Palestinians and allow them to leave and be ethnically cleansed from the Gaza Strip itself. That apparently has failed. But you can't now say, okay, well, you're going to have to teach, like, you're going to have to not teach any of those things. I don't know how you thread that needle, even from the Israeli side, of saying, okay, you can only teach these things. Are you going to say something positive about the Israeli side when they're is nothing positive to report from the Palestinian historical perspective. So that that just seems like an impossible ask. I mean, any Palestinian leadership that agreed to those kinds of terms and then started teaching their children, I mean, the parents would go crazy. They would never accept that. So I don't know if that's a poison pill that's built into this. It says, yes, for them to return, they have to do this, knowing that they can't do that. I don't know. But there's going to have to be somebody. Otherwise, it's going to be Israel. So you see, there's lots of difficulties there. And there's just going to have to be a new security and governance architecture as well. And that's going to have to work on both sides. So you see, there's some really, really, really big issues that haven't even been negotiated yet. Good deal on getting the killing stopped. If it stops, and Gary's been showing you some scenes just a few minutes ago from within the Gaza Strip, and there's a lot of celebration. I can only imagine after 2 years of just incessant bombing and drone strikes and tank fires, as happened apparently earlier today, even machine guns, et cetera. And all of a sudden the guns go silent. It just has to be a euphoric moment of great relief. But if history is any detail, that euphoria will wear off and you're going to have a whole new level of things you're going to have to deal with. So we're way far away from having this situation ended or turned into something meaningful and decent. But there's a start. So there's a hope here and there's a possibility. And in fact, speaking of the word hope, I will go back to what I said when this war began. If Israel ever wants to have a peaceful and stable environment to where its people can live in freedom and they don't have to worry about rockets falling on them from any of the Palestinian areas or terrorist strikes going on, et cetera, they're going to have to give the Palestinian people some kind of a future and a hope that they too can live in peace, that they too can live without worrying about tanks rolling down their streets, without settlers coming in and attacking their people and forcing them out of their home, without bulldozers coming in and destroying their homes. You have to have a situation where both have a chance for a future and a peaceful hope, or neither one of them are going to. So we're still on, and I hope that the negotiators, I hope that the president of the United States, the prime minister of Israel, whoever is going to lead the Palestinian people, I hope they all keep that in mind, that they all have to have a future and a hope, or nobody's going to. All right, that's what we have for you today. That's what we've known so far. We'll continue to update, especially as any statements are made from the Israeli cabinet and from the president of the United States as we go forward in this day even. And please do join us at 1 o'clock today with Professor John Mearsheimer, always one of our most popular shows, playing hardball with Russia, NATO playing hardball with Russia. And then we'll go more into issues of the Middle East peace. And as important, what about the Iranian factor? Because that you can't talk about the issue with Palestine without talking about the Iranian factor. That's at the heart of all this. More on that this afternoon at 1 o'clock. We will see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.